The Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo. Part 4, The Yoga of Self-Perfection. Chapter 19, The Nature of the Supermind, at the bottom of page 792. There is a highest intuitive mind which receives more nearly the supermental truth. But even this is a formation which conceals the direct and greater real knowledge. There is an intellectual mind which is a luminous, half-opaque lid, which intercepts and reflects in a radiantly distorting and suppressively modifying atmosphere the truth known to the supermind. There is a still lower mind, built on the foundation of the senses, between which and the sun of knowledge there is a thick cloud, an emotional and a sensational mist and vapor, with here and there lightnings and illuminations. There is a vital mind which is shut away even from the light of intellectual truth. And lower still in submental life and matter, the spirit involves itself entirely as if in a sleep and a night, a sleep plunged in a dim and yet poignant nervous dream, the night of a mechanical somnambulist energy. It is a re-evolution of the spirit out of this lowest state, in which we find ourselves at a height above the lower creation, having taken it up all in us, and reaching so far in our ascent only the light of the well-developed mental reason. The full powers of self-knowledge and the illumined will of the spirit are still beyond us, above the mind and reason, in supramental nature. If the spirit is everywhere, even in matter, in fact matter itself is only an obscure form of the spirit, and if the supermind is the universal power of the spirit's omnipresent self-knowledge, organizing all the manifestation of the being, then, in matter and everywhere, there must be present a supramental action, and, however concealed it may be by another lower and obscurer kind of operation, yet, when we look close, we shall find that it is really the supermind which organizes matter, life, mind, and reason. And this actually is the knowledge towards which we are now moving. There is even a quite visible intimate action of the consciousness, persistent in life, matter, and mind, which is clearly a supermental action, subdued to the character and need of the lower medium, and to which we now give the name of intuition, from its most evident characteristics of direct vision and self-acting knowledge. Really, a vision born of some secret identity with the object of the knowledge. What we call the intuition is, however, only a partial indication of the presence of the supermind. And if we take this presence and power in its widest character, we shall see that it is a concealed supramental force with a self-conscious knowledge in it which informs the whole action of material energy. It is that which determines what we call law of nature, maintains the action of each thing according to its own nature, and harmonizes and evolves the whole, which would otherwise be a fortuitous creation apt at any moment to collapse into chaos. All the law of nature is a thing precise in its necessities of process, but as yet, in the cause of that necessity and of its constancy of rule, measure, combination, adaptation, result, a thing inexplicable, meeting us at every step with a mystery and a miracle. And this, must be either because it is irrational and accidental, even in its regularities, or because it is suprarational, because the truth of it belongs to a principle greater than that of our intelligence. That principle is the supramental. That is to say, the hidden secret of nature is the organization of something out of the infinite potentialities of the self-existent truth of the spirit, the nature of which is wholly evident only to an original knowledge, born of and proceeding by a fundamental identity, the spirit's constant self-perception. All the action of life, too, is of this character. And all the action of mind and reason, which is the first to perceive everywhere the action of a greater reason and law of being, and try to render it by its own conceptional structures, though it does not always perceive that it is something other than a mental intelligence which is at work, other than an intellectual logos. All these processes are actually spiritual and supramental in their secret government, but mental, vital, and physical in their overt process. The outward matter, life, mind, do not possess this occult action of the supermind, even while possessed and compelled by the necessity it imposes on their workings. There is what we are sometimes moved to call an intelligence and will, operating in the material force and the atom, although the words ring false, because it is not actually the same thing as our own will and intelligence. Let us say a covert intuition of self-existence at work. But the atom and force are not aware of it, and are only the obscure body of matter and of power created by its first effort of self-manifestation. The presence of such an intuition becomes more evident to us in all the action of life, because that is nearer to our own scale. And as life develops overt sense and mind, as in the animal creation, we can speak more confidently of a vital intuition which is behind its operations and which emerges in the animal mind in the clear form of instinct, an automatic knowledge implanted in the animal, sure, direct, self-existent, self-guided, which implies somewhere in its being an accurate knowing of purpose, relation, and the thing or object. It acts in the life force and mind, but yet the surface life and mind do not possess it and cannot give an account of what it does, or control, or extend the power at its will and pleasure. Here we observe two things. First, that the overt intuition acts only for limited necessity and purpose, and that in the rest of the operations of the nature, there is a double action, one uncertain and ignorant of the surface consciousness, and the other subliminal, implying a secret subconscient direction. The surface consciousness is full of a groping and seeking which increases rather than diminishes as life rises in its scale and widens in the scope of its conscious powers. But the secret self within assures, in spite of the groping of the vital mind, the action of the nature and the result needed for the necessity, the purpose, and the destiny of the being. This continues on a higher and higher scale up to the human reason and intelligence. The being of man also is full of physical, vital, emotional, psychical, and dynamic instincts and intuitions, but he does not rely on them as the animal does. though they are capable in him of a far larger scope and greater action than in the animal and lower creation, by reason of his greater actual evolutionary development, and his yet greater potentiality of development of the being. He has suppressed them, discontinued their full and overt action by atrophy. Not that these capacities are destroyed, but rather held back or cast back into the subliminal consciousness. And consequently, this lower part of his being is much less sure of itself, much less confident of the directions of his nature, much more groping, errant, and fallible in its larger scope than that of the animal in his lesser limits. This happens because man's real dharma and law of being is to seek for a greater self-aware existence, a self-manifestation no longer obscure and governed by an ununderstood necessity, but illumined, conscious of that which is expressing itself, and able to give it a fuller and more perfect expression. And finally, his culmination must be to identify himself with his greatest and real self and act, or rather let it act, this natural existence being an instrumental form of the expression of the Spirit in its spontaneous, perfect will and knowledge. His first instrument for this transition is the reason and the will of the rational intelligence. And he has moved to depend upon that to the extent of its development for his knowledge and guidance, and give it the control of the rest of his being. And if the reason were the highest thing, and the greatest all-sufficient means of the self and spirit, he could by it know perfectly and guide perfectly all the movements of his nature. This he cannot do entirely because his self is a larger thing than his reason. And if he limits himself by the rational will and intelligence, he imposes an arbitrary restriction, both in extent and in kind, on his self-development, self-expression, knowledge, action, ananda. The other parts of his being demand, too, a complete expression in the largeness and perfection of the self, and cannot have it if their expression is changed in kind and carved, cut down, and arbitrarily shaped and mechanized in action by the inflexible machinery of the rational intelligence. The Godhead of the reason, the intellectual logos, is only a partial representative and substitute for the greater supramental logos, and its function is to impose a preliminary partial knowledge and order upon the life of the creature. But the real, final, and integral order can only be founded by the spiritual supermind in its emergence. The supermind in the lower nature is present most strongly as intuition, and it is therefore by a development of an intuitive mind that we can make the first step towards the self-existent, spontaneous, and direct supramental knowledge. All the physical, vital, emotional, psychic, dynamic nature of man is a surface seizing of suggestions which rise out of a subliminal, intuitive self-being of these parts. And an attempt, usually groping and often circuitous, to work them out in the action of a superficial embodiment and power of the nature which is not overtly enlightened by the inner power and knowledge. And increasingly intuitive mind has the best chance of discovering what they are seeking for and leading them to the desired perfection of their self-expression. The reason itself is only a special kind of application made by a surface regulating intelligence of suggestions which actually come from a concealed, but sometimes partially overt and active power of the intuitive spirit. In all its actions, there is, at the covered or half-covered point of origination, something which is not the creation of the reason, but given to it, either directly by the intuition or indirectly through some other part of the mind, for it to shape into intellectual form and process. The rational judgment in its decisions and the mechanical process of the logical intelligence, whether in its more summary or in its more developed operations, conceals while it develops the true origin and native substance of our will and thinking. The greatest minds are those in which this veil wears thin, and there is the largest part of intuitive thinking, which often, no doubt, but not always, brings with it a great accompanying display of intellectual action. The intuitive intelligence is, however, never quite pure and complete in the present mind of man, because it works in the medium of mind and is at once seized on and coated over with a mixed stuff of mentality. It is as yet not brought out, not developed and perfected so as to be sufficient for all the operations now performed by the other mental instruments, not trained to take them up and change them into or replace them by its own fullest, most direct, assured, and sufficient workings. This can indeed only be done if we make the intuitive mind a transitional means for bringing out the secret supermind itself, of which it is a mental figure, and forming in our frontal consciousness a body, an instrument of supermind, which will make it possible for the self and spirit to display itself in its own largeness and splendor. It must be remembered that there is always a difference between the supreme supermind of the omniscient and omnipotent Ishvara and that which can only be attained by the jiva. The human being is climbing out of the ignorance, and when he ascends into the supramental nature, he will find in its grades of its ascension, and he must first form the lower grades and limited steps before he rises to higher summits. He will enjoy there the full essential light, power, ananda of the infinite self by oneness with the spirit. But in the dynamical expression, it must determine and individualize itself according to the nature of the self-expression, which the transcendent and universal spirit seeks in the jiva. It is God-realization and God-expression which is the object of our yoga, and more especially of its dynamic side. It is a divine self-expression in us of the Ishvara, but under the conditions of humanity and through the divinized human nature. End of chapter 19, page 798.